No, like, I'm not, look, if the young boy, I mean, all ass kissing aside, this is just a real dream to be here.
No
I'm freaking the fuck out.
All right, we are.
Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, we can swear.
All right, just make you swear. Because I'm tripping the fuck out. This is too much to handle. I'm like an M. Night Shyamalan movie or something right now.
John Fitch knows nothing. Back again. Oh, technical difficulties here. Okay. Now we're good. And yeah, John Fitch knows nothing. Episode 27. We're live.
Wow.
My man JP.
Hello, John, everybody. Paul
Savis.
I'm going to do my best to just stay calm and talk slow because this is already overwhelming being with you on this. Because like 15 years ago, you were making the highlights of my life. I'm not really into sports, but MMA really was something special for me. And I watched you, and my nephew and I would watch you, and you made many of my nights. And I remember when you beat Jake Shields and you fought Yushin. And then when you took on BJ and you drew, it was a draw. I mean, it was just, and then it's like, if I hadn't followed my dreams, I would never be here. If I never smoked weed, I'd never be here. And now here I am with John Fitch because I said yes to weed 15 years ago.
All right. JP is in the house. John Fitch knows nothing. I got another special guest. We talk about, guy stuff here. Guys doing better, being better. JP is an entrepreneur. I've never known him to have a normal job. As long as I have known him. So, I usually play a set. So I gotta.
Play. Oh, please! Oh my God, this is amazing. I'm honored. I thought I'd get to roll with John Fitch. I get to listen and play the ukulele. Oh, for Elise.
Right.
I feel like Hannibal Lecter was here to be, John Fitch, yes. I'm impressed.
Nice. Coffee and Chianti beans.
We're going to have a little Chianti with Clarice and listen to you play the ukulele.
All right. So, JP, let's get a rundown kind of briefly. What was your trajectory coming out of high school?
I thought I was going to become this hardcore detective cop. I was going to join the Air Force. And then I was going to get laid a lot because women were going to think I was hot. Now, self-esteem issues. I wanted to be, all reality. My father was really sick in high school. He had brain cancer and we didn't have no cannabis or nothing. Mm. Chemo was hot back then. That was the new thing. Mm. My dad was one of the first to receive an open brain surgery in Stanford at the time. And we were really a poor family. So I had this freak out my junior year where I had a freak out. Like I was like, I'm not prepared to take care of my mom. I felt like I saw the future. It hit me all at once. I was like, my dad's going to die. My mom is not going to be able to handle it. She's not ready. I'm with a girl who doesn't really like me. I'm weak. I'm insecure.
Initiation into adult.
I was in third period class. And I remember I raised my hand and I was the math teacher, Mr. Wong. He's like a real badass, this like mean Chinese guy, but he was like awesome. And he probably did all kinds of stuff in the 80s with computers. Just a really, he used to call everybody Dingbat. I said, what do you want, Dingbat? And I said, sir, I know I always give you joke. I'm always playing around. I'm kind of having a moment. I need to go to the recruiting office right now. He's like, oh, go. Right. So I went to the Marines and Sergeant Lagan, who probably isn't listening to this. If you're listening to this, thank you.
So you were having a moment, and your way to deal with the moment was go to the Marines.
I knew I had to go in the military. I had a feeling that somehow that's what I needed. I personally, it wasn't a commercial. I knew I needed some discipline. I knew I needed to get strong.
Direction. You needed a purpose.
And I felt that maybe that would give me I didn't know what I wanted to be. You know, it was hard for me to fit in high school because I was really smart, but I got picked on a lot.
I don't know anybody who knows. I wouldn't be a pro football player. So.
Well, look, you did better than that.
Yeah. Well,
you're pro something.
But yeah, so like, yeah.
Which, by the way, a lot of kids out there.
Nobody really knows what they want to do. And adults usually don't do a very good job of
helping,
instructing you on what is available.
Correct. They sort of indoctrinate you into what they kind of want you. You like your dad's movies. You like your mom's music. you know, you like the 49ers because your dad liked the 49ers.
I mean, there's a lot of things are created in the times, especially nowadays, that a lot of things are created from the time that your parents worked and the types of jobs that are available now.
Agreed.
You know,
well, just like with you in MMA, I mean, you thought you wanted to be a pro football player because you couldn't MMA fight. That's crazy.
It didn't exist.
That didn't exist. You found like UFC in the same aisle at Blockbuster with Many Faces of Death. You know what I'm saying? You wanted to watch a UFC, but you got to go in the weird cult section with Pumping Iron. And there's John Fitch, UFC 47.
It's true.
You know what I'm saying? So you wouldn't have known. I mean, to tell your mom you wanted to be a fighter, it would have been like, oh my God. Now it's like kids do.
No, I didn't tell my mom the first 3 years of my fight career.
Well, she was kind of like embarrassed or ashamed.
Well, no, it's like out. Nobody knew what it was. Like, nobody knew what it was. Like, how much? Yeah, mom. So I went to Purdue for 5 years. I'm currently in a grad school program that I have a year paid for because of scholarship thing. And I'm also fighting for $300. Like in a smoky bar. It's pretty cool. Like,
it wasn't for a while. Not, I mean, it was
it's
illegal.
Not a, it's not an easy
it's still in New York. Is it legal now?
It's legal in all 50 states.
It's all legal now in 50 states. Yeah, it was illegal for a long time.
For a little bit.
Like tattoos. Tattoos
in
MMA.
It wasn't an easy thing. And for a while, it made sense. It was easier to just not bring it up,
right,
than it was to try to explain it and deal with phone calls every week about, you know, why are you doing this? There's a job here. You could take this job. Like, I was like, it was better just not to say anything.
I agree. In fact, that's some of the same advice I've taken in my life, where sometimes you have to not. It's on a need-to-know basis.
Yeah.
And right now, what you have to do is prove your actions and the trajectory is right. Yeah, do the work. It'll speak for itself. And that's how you'll get people on your side.
I find there's a balance there, too, though. Sometimes you need to shut up and do it. And then sometimes I have to say things out loud in front of people.
Or you'll never do it.
Yeah, because that holds me to it.
Yeah, that's right? True.
It's like
if you don't.
I think it depends on the crowd, you know. Like certain people, it's going to mean more if I say it in front of some of my good friends, like Mo.
Right.
If I say something, I'm going to do this in front of Mo, like, I better do it because he's going to check in. He's like, hey, did you get it done yet?
Right.
Do the thing you're going to do. But like for some people, I think they get the satisfaction of doing it just by talking about it.
Right.
That's a fine line.
Agreed. I agree.
So you're taking on this responsibility and you think the best thing to do is, of course, the action is to join the military.
And which, by the way, I suck at PE. I get picked on all the time. I can't fight. I just got my nose broken in the fight.
So did Captain America.
You know what? I was literally him. I was the Arabic Mexican version of him, but there was no serum for me, folks. There was no serum. And the military still took me. And so the Marine guy took one look at me. He's like, I need you to fill out this paper real quick. Give me like a quick ASVAB,
mm-hmm.
the battery, that's the standard test that kind of breaks down. Give me a quick, they have like a little 20 question one to assess you. So he wanted to make sure that my brain matched my knees because I had weak ass knees. So his mind's like, this guy better be smart because I didn't have a good back. I had flat feet. You know what I'm saying? I'm coming to join the Marines. Like, I hope you're smart. He looked at my test and sure enough, I scored really high. And he's like, listen, you're going to thank me for this. And he's like, but you're in the wrong department. So he walked me over to the Air Force and he's like, Sergeant Logan, by the way, you know you're in trouble when you find out, you know, one day before you go in the military that your recruiter's middle name is Tequila. So, you know, he puts me the Air Force guy. He's like, I got one for you. And, you know, I was offended at first. I felt disappointed, but I continued on. And let me tell you, my first night when I finally went to sleep at boot camp, and everybody's like, you're here. It's like that scene in Shawshank Redemption when you hear the guys crying in their bed. You know, there's like people, good night, ladies. I was in the middle of like, should I cry? I was like, you know, because I came from a real loving family and stuff. I never left on camping trips. I didn't do sleepovers. So I'm lying in the bed, and all I could think was like, oh, thank you, Sergeant Lagan. Thank you so much. You know, and I always thought about him more than my recruiter. Because that guy picked for me correctly. And that's another big thing for me and my success and how I am with people is sometimes you got to make those good calls, you know, and that guy changed my life.
Yeah. And being able to, you know, pivot, you know, you kind of had an idea what you wanted to do, but you got a little direction from somebody.
That best decision
little,
I ever made.
You got a little bit of direction from somebody who knew more.
Correct.
Knew a little bit more.
Yeah. He was like picking out gladiators, like some live, some die. You know, he's like, oh, this guy, you're going in the wrong one, buddy. And it was true because if recruiters do their job, that is how it should be. It's like learning to pick the right guys for the right field, not being greedy. I mean, if you would have taken me in the Marines, I probably would have washed out. I didn't have the physical endurance. I had the mental, but who knows? I would have got through and I would have broken. Like a lot of guys who have back problems, and they didn't even get in.
Yeah.
They broke their leg or twist their ankle, and now you're like out.
So there needs to be a better way of teachers having that ability to kind of guide students better, you know? Like,
yeah.
Hey, your son could probably do really well in these types of jobs and trades. And, you know, maybe even save them. Like they spend their high school years in a trade school.
Agreed. Instead of
learning calculus or whatever, when you're really going to be better off as a plumber, where you're still going to be able to make six figures or start your own business.
There's so many. I mean this with my whole heart because I feel some of the great teachers in my life, I credit them. I still think about them just as I think about the horrible ones that made my life a living hell. There was a lot of unhealthy people mm-hmm. who took out their frustrations and stuff on
crabs in the book.
Yeah. You know, where it was this person shouldn't be here. Well, I think of some of my teachers, like Mr. Costa, who, I mean, I still think about that guy. Where is that guy? I would love to see him again. He was an inspiration. And when school was already shitty enough and you hate yourself, your self-esteem is low because you get picked on or you don't fit in, to have a teacher who makes you feel good about yourself, makes you want to come to class, that's powerful, you know? And that's sort of the same application it should be with our children or in life. It's like, how do you keep your kids from doing drugs? It's like, you can't. All you can do is instill in them the value in themselves to not want to. You know, and that's all you can.
The idea of purpose, giving them something that they believe in, something that they are passionate about. I think, and for me, because I have kids, so I feel that being an example is the best way to instill that into them. So, I mean, if you have a soulless job that you hate, and you're just punching the clock every day, and then you don't have anything you're passionate about, you don't have anything you can put yourself into, like, I don't know. How are they going to be able to figure out how to spend all their time about something they really love and enjoy.
So with you,
it's not a video game.
I feel like, so I totally agree with you. Like I look at you, John, and you are an example father. Like you have created a life for them. You can defend them. You can uplift them. You gotta be healthy to be a parent. You gotta be in the right position. Some parents will realize like you gotta take stock in yourself before you have kids and realize, are you gonna be what they need to get them through this life? I'm sorry. It's a rough thing and it sucks, but I feel like I'm such a great father. I didn't have kids because I already knew. I would love to have kids, but I took stock in myself. My dad left us with a lot of debt. You know, I look at me and where my life, my duty was now to clean up the mess and to be the best man I could be. And in order to do that, I can't have kids because you got to give all yourself.
You have
to
a long shelf life.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you know what? I get to be the cool ass uncle now.
I talk about, what's his name? It was one of the actors, the original actors from The Strange Couple or something like that.
The Odd Couple.
The Odd Couple.
You mean Jack Lemmon?
Who's the other one?
Bob Hope? No.
No.
Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau?
Oh, is it? Oh.
Jeez, I'm such an old school movie guy.
No. Yeah.
Siri, who was the original Odd Couple?
There's a guy back from the TV series, I think, from a long time ago.
Here are matches for Odd Couple.
It's like
But anyways, I think there's some actor who had kids until he was like 80.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, that's
seed
my
is still good.
That's my
strong seed.
As long as you're healthy. okay. So then, all right, you go to the Air Force, make the right choice, go to the Air Force. How long were you in the Air Force?
So my original stay was 4 years. I got released I got an early separation. I still got my honorable discharge, but my father had passed away into my career, and I was now doing 9/11. So basically 9/11 happened 4 weeks into my boot camp. So that changed everyone's life. Like I got in like, well, hey, I'm going to the Air Force. I don't want to do combat. I want to wear the beret. I want to carry a gun. I want to get laid. I want to be a cop. I want to get a bachelor's degree. And I want to come home and be a hometown hero.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, 9/11 happened. And I don't know if it's okay screw it. I'm going to talk about it because I'm at that point in my life where I'm not trying to go into conspiracy theories or nothing, but I went into boot camp August 1st, 2001, okay? Now, I had a hard time in boot camp because I talk fast. I come from a loving family, I mentioned that, where I express my feelings. Everybody can't sit still. I'm loud. Everything you don't want boot camp to be. Plus, I have a really long name. So my name is Juan Pablo Nabil Abu Ghazali Aceves. My parents are just I don't know what's going on there, you know. And so I was already in trouble when I got off the bus because my name was so long. Even though the recruiter had we went under these rules: don't cut your hair too short, don't have long hair, don't have color in your hair, don't wear an Air Force shirt. You know how many kids wear their recruiter Air? That's a shitty recruiter. Didn't tell him not to wear the shirt he gave him. You know why you don't wear an Air Force shirt? Because when you get out of the bus and they don't know, there's a thousand kids like, hey, you, Air Force shirt. This guy thinks he's in the air. That's the guy you don't want to be, right? Then you got the hippie guy with the long hair. Don't want to be him. But then you don't want to be the guy who buzz cutted his hair. They fuck with that guy too. So I made it, right? I'm on the tarmac. There's all these kids in Indian style. They bring out this list. And they're like, all right, we're going to holy fuck. And my name was all the way out like this on the list. So it was like, all right, holy gee. And they call another sergeant. I started sweating. My pits started sweating already. Now there's three sergeants looking at the name. And so I tried to take charge of the situation. So I raised my hand. I go, sir, training permission to adjust and speak. And they go, speak. And I go, sir, I think you're looking at my name. And he looks at it and goes, how do you know that? You know you got a fucked up name? He's like, get your ass up here. You got a fuck. That shit followed me to my barracks. So I was the guy with the fucked up name. You know what I'm saying? And so I was my.
Could be worse.
Oh, no. I'll tell you, it got worse. Eventually, my name became Airman Jihad because I was half Arab. And by the way, this is my claim to fame. I'm in my locker, in my boxer shorts. And they came into a surprise inspection. Everybody already knew who I was. And I was already the half Arabic guy. 9/11 had already popped off. So they lined us up to an inspection. And this colonel had come in to meet me. And he's like, at ease. And so I'm all like against the locker. And he's like, so I heard you're some kind of Arab warrior. And I told him, well, sir, I'm actually half. He's like, what's your name? I go, Juan Pablo. He's like, Juan Pablo, what kind of Arab name is that? I said, sir, I'm half Mexican. So he turns to the other sergeants because there was always this game they were playing, you know, mind games. He goes, Sergeant Bruno, you told me we had a goddamn Arab warrior. He's like, how the hell are we going to win a war with a goddamn half-breed? Right? And so I stand at attention and my heart was racing. I go, sir, Trini Gonzalez, permission to speak. He goes, speak. Sir, I may be half Arab, but I'm twice the infidel. And he's like, God damn it, that's what I'm talking about. You hear that? He's like, I'm going to call you Airman Jihad. And I said, you can call me whatever you want, sir, as long as you spell it with a G. You put a G-I in Jihad, sir, because I put the G-I in Jihad. And that was it. That was my nickname. I was Airman Jihad, and I was hot shit now for the last part. Oh. But so we're doing chemical warfare training.
Got to lean into it sometimes.
Pivot.
Yeah. You got to be willing to pivot. You got to lean into it. Don't be too outcome dependent.
So what I'm going to say next is like, look, I'm just disclaimer, whatever. I don't care.
See, if you would have been outcome dependent on being a Marine, you wouldn't have left that guy's office, right?
No, God, no. Right? God, yeah. No.
Be flexible.
And you got to see your moment too. In life, you'll see little moments. That's how you lead up to entrepreneurship in your life. Before you can be an entrepreneur, you have to learn what it's like to take chances and when you're right. And you have that instinct. You can do it at an early age. That moment when you raise your hand in class to say the right answer. Or that moment you step up to speak to a colonel and stand for yourself. You got to know when you're in the right. And it takes having respect and respecting people to understand that balance. And real quick, I want to put a disclaimer because I know people, conspiracy
fortune
theories, whatever.
Favors the bold.
It does. And it was September 8th or 9th. And we were doing chemical warfare training. And I always like to tell people this, like, I'll do a little quick example with anybody out
there.
Don't
get me Hillary'd.
If you are listening to this, here's a question. Can you remember where you were on September 11th? I think that's the easiest question. Everyone can tell us, where were you? Now, here's a hard question. Where were you on the 10th? It's almost like life stopped existing for many of us after 11th. We forgot about anything before that. And where were you on the 10th? Do you remember you were on the September 10th?
Probably it was a school day.
It's got to think about it, you know?
Because I just remember there was classes on the day that it happened.
I know where I was. I was doing chemical warfare training in Lackland Air Force Base, Texas. I can't remember if it was the 9th or the 10th, but we were taking turns putting on these outfits with charcoal. We were pretending to inject ourselves with the atrophy, you know, so you can keep living for a couple more seconds. Your face don't melt off. You know, it was hot. I hated life. You know what I'm saying? Me and my partner kept taking turns, and they started taking us into these tents. 20 at a time. And so when it was our turn, the scariest thing in boot camp was to fall asleep, right? So they would always say, like, if you feel like you're tired, don't get yelled at, go walk to the back and stand up, right? So I'm in this tent and there's all these important people and they have like one of those projector sets that you have in like math class.
Mm-hmm.
And fuck, man, let me tell you, what they were telling me at the time, I was trying not to sleep. And this sergeant this lady sergeant was like breaking down 9/11, and they were telling us that we were going to get attacked in the next couple days and that we should be prepared. Now, they had told us when we started Warrior Week, because this was my fourth week, when we go out into the forest. Mm-hmm. So not everybody's in the same week. So depending on where you are, it was like 800 to 1,000 kids for their week out getting to fire the M16. We get to live in tents. We get to pretend we're tough. That's our Marine week right there. This is we get our version of the Crucible, you know, where we stay up for 24 hours, exciting, drinking canteens, getting yelled at. If you got in trouble, they would give you an Embark 9. So if you did something with your plastic, mm-hmm. with your rubber gun, and you couldn't be trusted, they made you go find a stick that looked like, nine. And you were that kid with the Embark 9. You know, you didn't want to be him, and everybody would judge him. Oh, look at Marco. He's got an M9. Fuck that guy, loser. You know, so we're with the rubber guns. So they had told us that we were going to get attacked and to keep our eyes open. So it was like, that's Warrior Week. Is at any time the sergeant would come out with a gun or they would take one of your dudes out. It was fun. They'd break into the thing where we're sleeping. So we thought it was a game. So they broke down 9/11 and they gave us three scenarios. And I remember I was trying not to sleep in the class. And the first one was they had given a scenario that 50 U-Hauls would explode at the same time on a doomsday timer. A doomsday timer is basically a clock that's set to explode at the same time, no matter New York,
yeah,
San Jose, it's on the same Zulu time. And that they would park vehicles all across the United States and they would explode at the same time. That was the first scenario. Second scenario was the airplane scenario. And I remember like they said three airplanes and three targets. You know what I'm saying? And Osama bin Laden. And I was like, whatever. The shit was over. The next day or so, they woke us up at like 6 a.m. with blanks. Boom, boom, boom. And one of the sergeants threw a smoke grenade outside of our tent. I mean, that shit was exciting, right? Like, this is like, they got us up, grabbed my rubber gun. I put my helmet on. I fucking came out there like I'm sick, you know? And they started separating people. And they said, if you were from New York or New Jersey, you went this way. And everybody else on this one, New York, New Jersey. You got family in New York, New Jersey. We went into this other area. And I get chills telling the story. And if anybody else was from Ramstein, served in Ramstein, or you were in boot camp in August or September of 2001, if you were in a Hotel Hell, you were in the Rock, Candyland, Wolfpack, if you were out in Lackland Air Force Base, you're part of a very special thing that took place 20 years ago or whatever. August 1st, I don't know if anybody wants to get a hold of me or talk about it or has the courage to come out. If you remember, do you even remember? Because it took me almost a year later to remember because we were all so deprived of sleep and so on this like adrenaline. So they woke us up and I went to another area. And we waited for a briefing, said we're going to get a briefing. And this like really like charismatic sergeant came out. And he was like all over the place. And he was like, we've been attacked. Our country's been attacked. And we were like, yeah, we've been attacked. Like, we're going to play a game. I thought we were going to play paintball, laser tag. I don't know. It was going to get real. And he goes, I'll never forget this. He goes, raise your hand if you signed up for college. Oh, shit. Right? Nobody raised their hand, by the way. I was the only idiot that raised my hand. I was so always
often
involved.
It's an often opportunity that goes unused.
Yes. So I threw my hand up. And he goes, God damn it, put your fucking hand down. You should be ashamed of yourself. And he came up close to me and he said, well, let me tell you, buddy, you're going to earn your college this time because we're going to war. And he's like, if you thought you were going to get a free pass, you're wrong. So I don't know. We still don't know what's going on. I haven't watched TV for weeks. I think one time when I went to the BX, someone had whispered to me Aaliyah had died. Or no, what was the girl from the TLC.
Oh.
Left eye. And it was like in jail. Like they passed me a kite and I'm like what? Because we were allowed to talk to nobody. And I got sent to go get toothpaste. And someone read the newspaper and like I went to the thing like, hey, the girl from TLC died. Like, oh shit. Because we were deprived of news. People would send us letters, but we weren't allowed to get letters for the first 4 weeks. We weren't in that phase yet. So I had no clue what was going on in the world. So they loaded us up into another bus. And it was when we were in the bus that we went back to our dorms that we started to see this shit was real. We seen Lincolns with dudes in suits holding HKs like in the movie, like Secret Service was on the base. And each guy had one bulletproof car with a mini M6, M4 or an HK5. And they were all lined up. And you know what everybody started doing? Everybody started freaking out on the bus praying. Like everybody, like we were all like, I'm not even religious no more. Our Father who art in heaven, I'll be there. Hail Mary. So they got us into the dorm. They locked everybody in. And once we were locked in, sergeant came in, took us in the day room, turned the TV on and was like, look what's happened to your country. I swear to God, I thought the world had ended. Everybody was scared to death. And at that point, we were there. Like, we were hardcore. There was no more joking troops. Around. That was, they said that since Pearl Harbor, we were the first units in boot camp to be given an M16 loaded for security. And what we would do is we would do 2-hour shifts and we had to walk the perimeter and you would hand over the M16. It was like, check it, charge around, walk around with your M16, pass it to the next guy. So it, shit was real. And so my experience in the Air Force was totally different. It was a whole nother Air Force at this time now. It was a whole nother military.
Yeah.
And I signed up for nuclear security, so I was in for a big letdown.
The party days of the 90s were over.
Yes.
It's like real shit.
Real shit was happening now. And I did nuclear security, so I was part of like a SWAT team type. We did 15 and 5s, 30 30s, 30 minutes and 30 minutes. Like, it sucked being a nuke cop because even on your day off, it was so funny. If the alarm went off, you had to like respond to shit. So if you had a date or a girl in your room or something, or your parents were visiting from wherever, sorry, mom, you got to put your helmet on. And then they would send dogs to sniff in the rooms to make sure people weren't hiding in closets. Or one dude tried to hide himself under his mattress. The bed had these beds had these little things to hide gear in, like a coffin. And he got stuck there for 3 hours, freaking screaming. You know, people would do all kinds of crazy shit to get out of it. Or, you know, we would get in trouble because someone would leak that there was going to be a 30-30. So all of us would take off to the mall. So there's like 15 cops at the mall just happened to go to Taco Bell and someone would report it like all the cops are here. So it was an exciting time. But I had a real hard time with my mom and my dad and doing solitary confinement. And that's, I think, when I first started to know that I was going through depression and the PTSD from some of the things I was involved with were kicking in. And you don't necessarily have to be in combat. I never got to deploy. I got stuck doing nuclear security.
Well, I mean, high stress situations are, that's what.
Oh, yeah. Man. Try doing 14 stress hours in the size of a metal foam
stress, booth. Stress disorder. So you can have PTSD from all kinds of things.
Well, so one of the things for us that we had to have on our conscience was being a new cop meant that if some shit went down, you were killing your friend. So if he got held hostage, we would train like how to deal with the hostages. So if they took one of us into a vault, you know what I'm saying? We would do practice where you get a buzz saw and we put a hole in it. And literally, it was like toss flash grenades. That shit ricochets when you fire in there. They would just say, hit the ground. You know what I'm saying? And crazy. So we were always under like a lot of stress, a lot of scrutiny, no solitary confinement. Like when I watch Oz, I laugh because sort of like being a new cop was being in an enclosed facility the size sometimes of a phone booth or like a little shack, and you were there for 14 hours in the forest by yourself. You know what I'm saying?
I got a question here. Leah Flea says, was there martial arts training for the airmen?
You know what? So there was, and the Marines got sicker shit like Pat Milicek and stuff like that. Yeah. We got Ekio and we got Kempo and basic Taekwondo, karate, and techniques to disarm. I mean, things that would get you killed if you didn't really know how to use it. But again, we were a deterrent. You know, the cops would always joke that we were not Steven Seagal. We were the guys in the movie that got killed guarding the plane that led up to Steven Seagal. But the Air Force has changed now. After 9/11 and since then, now they've implemented now mixed martial arts and all kinds of other hand-to-hand combat training, as now even the boot camp in the Air Force has been extended
available,
and they got to do gas chamber now training too, which is I got away with not having to do the gas chamber training.
Yeah, that's awful. I've heard stories about the gas chamber training. What's the Xbox One's asking, what were the physical requirements for airmen?
So you had to, so Air Force has the highest ASVAP minimum, so Marines has the lowest. No offense, guys, because you guys are fucking badass, so I'm not clowning, but it's the truth.
So, yeah, the smarter guys.
Correct. So it goes, if I'm not mistaken, Marines, you got to score a 38 or a 42. Don't get mad at me, guys, if I'm incorrect about that. And then it goes Army, Navy, then Marine, then Air Force has the highest, which is a 54 on the minimum scale.
They may have dropped all of everything lower, too.
Correct.
These days.
So then... Yeah. No, let me tell you this. The Air Force holds the standards when it comes to getting. They wouldn't even let you.
They have to because they have a lot more, a lot more techie type.
Absolutely, positions. We Air Force is a more management based.
They're like the
field.
STEM. They're like the STEM field of military.
Very good. Yes, if you want to get into, I tell you this. If you want to have a career outside of the military, join the Air Force. They prepare you. That's what it is. They teach you how to be cutthroat in the office.
I got a couple friends that did the Air Force route. And then one became a ranger.
Oh, and that they say it's a tie between it's always argued who's the toughest special forces, the Air Force Pararescue or the Navy SEALs. The reason they put the Pararescue up there is because Pararescue is trained just like a Navy SEAL. I mean, they go through the most intense training out there, and then they have to do halo jumps and stuff like that. So they do train with the Navy and stuff like that. But a Pararescue guy is a combat killer trained not to kill but to save lives. That's why they have to be trained to be the baddest killer, because they need to send the dude in there to rescue people without and not kill nobody. You're in there to bring people back. Nicest guys ever.
They sneak in to bring them back alive.
Yeah.
Or he's just going to kill everybody.
When you see that maroon beret, you know, you're fucking, it's going to be okay.
Okay. So how? So then after, what was the next steps after getting out of the military?
So that was my rough. That was rough because I felt a lot of loss, because what happened was I had made a comment to my chaplain that I was starting to feel depressed and I wanted to switch career. And that at the time was like, that was a no-no. You don't bring up depression.
Mm.
And so I had another sergeant who looked out for me, who was like, yo, bro, you can't, don't do this. You're going to fuck up your career, you know? And there's something I technically can't talk about in my career that I was involved in 2002, but it led me to getting, it caused an effect on me. And, you know, I get a little something now pension-wise after my service, which definitely helped me out. But they recanted my depression statement, and now I just kind of became sort of like a troublemaker, you know, like that's how it was now. Like, oh, they caught me wearing earrings off base, or, I mean, I lived in Germany for 3 years. And so in Germany, they love black and dark people. And unfortunately, I'm on the light skinned end of being Hispanic. So unless I was speaking Spanish, the girls weren't noticing me, and they are crazy about black guys and dark. So I just couldn't do it. I couldn't wear the do-rags and the Timberlands and North Carolina jerseys. So I found another way. I went to goth clubs. And that worked. I was the black guy there, baby. I had eyeliner. I wore pantyhose as a t-shirt. I didn't care. I was seeing Marilyn Manson in Dortmund. I was meeting girls like crazy. I found my home, baby. So one time I was going to a show. And I was
goth game.
In Germany,
you should write a book called Goth Game.
It was great, dude. And one of the
guys, colonels, what kind of eyeliner to get, where to get.
I wore a cape one day. I had chains on my boots. Bro, I didn't fuck around. I worked hella hard, 3 12-hour shifts. I'm taking a train to France for this goth party tonight. And I'm going to go like a freak with white powder on my face. And you know, I met some of the most beautiful women, and look. So now I'm getting dressed, and this colonel comes in to do a dorm inspection, and he's like, "I'm running to go get some makeup from my friend who I convinced to go to this thing," and he's like, "Gazala, what the fuck?" And I'm like, "Oh shit!" He's like, "What is this?" I was like, "I'm going to goth show." He's like, "Just get out."
Yeah.
So the next day, my sergeant is this lady, Sergeant Morton, this black lady, was like straight out of a comedy, Tyler Perry, Gazala. And like, I'm like arming up in the thing, you know, you're wearing some motherfucking pantyhose as a shirt, you know. It was an amazing time. So I was always getting in trouble. And so they did the best thing for me. They saved my career. They got me an early separation. I was able to get my honorable discharge. And with that, I went home and I was lost. I could get any job I wanted. You know, I was almost done with my bachelor's degree. I needed to take a couple more college courses, but because I had graduated from Lackland Air Force Base, Technical College, not Air Force, but Lackland Technical College, it was like a criminal justice equivalent. I did nuclear security. I got plenty of great referrals. You know, the honorable discharge helped. In my jacket, it says that I got in trouble for wearing earrings, which is hilarious because people look at it like, what do you mean fucking wearing earrings? Like, they had to let me go with something, you know, and I was able to keep my honorable, keep my uniform, keep my pension. But I felt a lot of shame because now I come back. I didn't want to be a cop no more. I was all over the place. I was all hopped up on energy drinks and weightlifting supplements. I was all bravado. Everybody thought I was doing meth all the time, which is like, I remember I get pulled over by this cop one day. He's like, why are you all jacked up? He's like, you work out? And I remember I was like, wow, you could tell. He's like, no, you act like you're on some supplements or something. And so I couldn't find my
rip fuel.
Yeah, I couldn't find my peace, dude. And then the more shame was like, my mom thought I was like this huge hero, but I didn't feel like it. I felt like, dude, the hero hasn't started yet. It wouldn't be till years later I would feel good about myself and what I'd be doing for her. It was going to be a long journey. into being able to find myself. And cannabis was a big part of that.
Yeah. So you bounced around trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Well, one thing I did was I took stock in myself and didn't try to do something I didn't want to do. So I didn't mind letting my mentor know I didn't want to be a cop anymore, because I mean, thank God, if I would have just done that out of pride or felt that I had to do this commitment now, I knew that my life had changed. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing, was accepting that. I knew that there was something off with me and that I was unhappy and that I needed to find it. I needed to find it. And I wasn't going to be good to anybody in a job or in a relationship. And I was really broke, living with my mom. You know, things did not get good. I didn't get my little settlement until years later. I was already given a great job working at a Owens Corning, a packing plant here in San Jose.
Okay, so well, you had to make money.
That's always been something I could do, is like holding out a job. If I could tell anybody, is like, don't ever be your job, but be good at the job.
Yeah.
Enough that you can always get more jobs, but take stock in yourself and save your money and use your job as a chance to propel you to the job that you want. A job gets you the job. Yes. Just like relationships. Sometimes you got to accept the relationship you're in is to get you ready for the relationship you're going to want to be in one day. And that's what it is sometimes. Maybe that's just a learning tool, but you got to be good to that relationship. So you get a good referral. You want to get a good referral. You want to get let go.
Well, you have to put yourself fully into anything if you're going to really grow and learn from it.
Absolutely.
Because then your failures are riddled with, well, I only put in half effort, so it wasn't a real failure. So you make no real adjustment.
Correct.
So and if you're putting yourself fully into something and you make the mistake, then, well, yeah, that was the mistake.
Correct. And I want to put out there, a lot of people get out of the military and think like, oh, I got PTSD, or I want to work on myself by going to do MMA. It's not always the best thing to do. Sometimes you need to go find other things. And it seems like MMA is a great way, but it's not. What MMA has developed to is it's good, but you have to understand MMA comes from being a fighter. There was no MMA before. When John Fitch was out there cracking skulls, MMA meant you were a fighter. And that's what they would call it. Now MMA is like, oh, mom, I want to take MMA. And it's like, oh, cool, let's get you the belt. And, you know, there's a difference between an MMA, does MMA, and being a fighter. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's two different.
It's a lot of people. Things. There are a lot of hobbyists.
Hobbyists. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a great discipline to stand behind. But John, you can attest to this. A lot of fighters have hard life. It's a hard life. There's a lot of things going on.
Well, they've been hard life, or they've been doing it for a very long time.
Yes, it wears on you.
You know, I mean, wrestling from the age of 9 is you're volunteering for suffering on a daily basis throughout the season.
Agreed.
And some people don't, they've never experienced that. They've never built the bone density from the pressure.
Correct.
Over a decade of doing something. You got to develop that. Over and over and over again.
And so I went, AKA was hot. So when I came back in 2005, that's when John Fitch was like, fucking really making it. This was like, oh, I would watch it. I would watch it. I was like, I'll pretend I was him. And I'd watch him from my living room. Yes, I'd watch you. This is me kissing John's butt a little bit, because I get to do that now. This is a dream. I'm telling you guys, like I was telling him earlier, to know that saying yes to weed now put me here in front of John's bitch somehow. You know, I got closer to sports and athletics and fighters than ever before. In 2005, coming back, I went to AKA because I was hot. And Dave Camarillo was the guy to go see. Mm-hmm. And so I went to go speak with him. I couldn't do MMA. Nobody wanted me. I was too all over the place. I was too angry. I came out all, like I would try to, you know, roll, relax, relax, relax. Well, the more the people tell me to relax, the more tense I would get, the more insecure. So I finally gave up on trying to be in the AK or do sports. And I felt even more depressed. And I was like, now I can't even connect with that shit. And I thought I was a badass or whatever. And I learned how to do, you know, some sort of self-defense in the Air Force, and you're this cop and you protect millions of dollars, but maybe you're really insecure because you never got tested. That was another thing too for me, was I felt a lot of shame to know that I got constantly put under the idea of war and that you're ready for it anytime we get attacked. And I went to all these like trainings and stuff, and I never got to use it.
Never. Yeah.
And they say, you know, you're unloading on the guy at Safeway because he said something to you wrong. You know,
getting into fighting a little bit, I kind of had that, you know, I've got to battle with wrestling for a long time, but I never really fought people. It was just not something that I was normal, was to get into a fist fight. Like got into a few fights with teammates, but
that happens.
Yeah. You know, it's not like necessarily a real fight. And then in college, even there's a few drunken, like big melees that happened, but it was still that's not really. It's not. You just grab somebody.
Fighting's not natural. It's not. It's not even natural for many people. Like that happened once in basic because we're all a bunch of most of us were geeks. It was like it was a bunch of geeks and a few jocks. That's how it always was. The smart jock guy who joined the Air Force and the geek guy who computer guy who wants to join. And one time we got in a fight and the sergeant was like, he made everyone turn their back. He's like, all right. He made me and the other guy fight. And it was the funny thing because we couldn't even hurt each other. I didn't know how to punch. I'd never been allowed to really punch someone.
Hurt your own hand.
Yeah, I hurt myself. It was funny that we finally just sitting there. He's like, you guys had enough? You guys had enough? Like, it was the first time I called inadequacy.
My very first fight, I'd never even sparred before. I went out there and I was like, they're like, go. And I was like, oh shit, this is like, this is happening. This is a fight. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to knock somebody out.
Fuck. I was like, try to hit him. Yeah. And, so it does. It goes against your
instincts. So for some of us,
it goes against your instincts. Most people want to avoid.
Correct.
Why? Because everybody does this whole time. Break everything down into survive. The number one rule, just survive.
Survive.
So like fighting unnecessarily.
Running, it's fight or flight.
Right. Well, it's like any energy expenditure. What's your return on the investment? Like
that's true too.
What's the risk and the damage and the effort put into fighting?
Like a mom breaking a windshield to save the baby.
versus avoiding the fight.
Or you're on a date with a girl you don't know too well. You take off, you know, or something. You've seen like when you watch those prank videos when the guy jumps out with the skull mask and the dude punches the friend in the face. He doesn't even move.
Are you ready to fight? Are you ready to throw down or not? So then when did you... Okay, so you started into jiu-jitsu then.
I did, and it didn't go well.
Well, it never goes well for anyone at first. We talk about that all the time, is that everybody sucked at whatever it was the first time.
Yeah, agreed. So I backed off and said, I told my mom, because, you know, everyone's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to go back to college? You're going to be a cop? I was like, you know what? I'm going to go be a bartender. And I remember my mom was like, just crushed. You know, she's like, oh no, Iraq has ruined my son. I was like, no, mom, Iraq did not ruin your son. Okay. Going to Germany and experiencing another life and realizing that there's another side of me now that I thought I wanted to be. I mean, I feel like I developed the idea of wanting to be a cop and this protector because I was always getting beat up and picked on and I couldn't fit in. But I was a good person and I was raised with good morals that's what you expect to be. So you get beat up, you picked on, the only thing to be is some sort of vigilante cop, protector. That's to me what I felt needed to be a man. I didn't have a strong male presence in my life. My dad was sick. So you think that the cops were always good to me. I was a wannabe cholo in my first 2 years in high school and the cops were like, what are you doing? They were some of my best friends. My teachers were always my friends. Older people were always my friends. So I didn't really fit in the normal sense, you know? So that's sort of how I developed. And I realized like I have these great personalities because I know old movies, old music. So bartending was a great place for me to start building my self-esteem. And over the next 8 years, I would build all the contacts I would need to get into where I am now.
Networking. It's important. A lot of people do not understand.
This guy.
Yeah. Yeah, boxer one says, get yourself a girl who looks at
what's he going? You, come on, what's
the
up?
Way JP looks at John. Marshall up here says cannabis alleviates the pressure of PTSD. Cannabis is better than any antidepressant.
I want to tell. Can I ask a question for Marshall?
Yeah.
So about, you know what, we have to be really careful with cannabis, and this is one of the things I was hoping to touch on today. Is that I don't think there's anyone really looking at cannabis for us who use it psychologically. Right now, all I ever hear now is, now that it made it through, is all I hear is, okay, pain, cancer. And then you hear we're talking about working out, but I don't hear anyone backing up about, yes, it's an antidepressant or how it can help make someone feel better about life or create homeostasis. Well,
I
mean,
I think it helps a lot with anxiety.
Well, here's the thing. Cannabis can actually further your anxiety as well. Oh, good. It can further your bipolarity. It can make your schizophrenia worse.
Strain just, matters.
It's not it is the strains, but what it is the terpenes. And nobody's looking at terpenes right now because A, terpenes are a very expensive test. B, terpenes are the defining factor. They're the engine in your car. If you don't have terpenes, who cares about how much THC it has? Terpenes are genetically gestated and they come from the seed, having good strains, being grown correctly. You can always scare a plant and breed it to pull out THC, but terpenes are difficult and they exist in a very small amount, and that's how powerful they are. And the one for antidepressant is actually limonene. Limonene is the one that many people think is a sativa, but you can't look at cannabis as indica or sativa because you'll always fail. If you suffer, if you're a person like me who is been programmed both from genetics and from environment to be nervous Nelly, I leak cortisol in my body. So things that make me nervous, I don't develop good muscles. So when my
testosterone, too.
So certain strains reverse that while other strains further it. It depends on your genetic disposition. So what people think is a sativa, I have to be careful because over the last 10 years, I've been crafting my use to avoid certain terpenes to help further evolve and develop my personality and my psyche and my mental dexterity the way that I want it. That's why a lot of people think I'm a snob. When like people want me to smoke, I don't want to smoke what you got because I don't know where it came from. I don't know what strain, what terpene. People have to take more respect in their use and realize you might be bringing on a world of hurt, but because there's so many good benefits with cannabis, you're not going to realize like, yeah, you fucked your psychological state of being up, where a lot of people are now more antsy, more nervous. They've even messed up their diet and they don't eat well because of their cannabis use. So limonene is the antidepressant and the anti-anxiety. Limonene is a terpene that smells like pine sol or lemon. But the problem is if you start crossing strains with other strains, you start combining those terpenes, you start tainting the experience and the expression. And technically we should have had strains that aren't crossed so that we could do that, where I could be like, oh, you're a nervous dude, stick with this one. Hey, you want to, you like intense uplifting strains? Well, here, have this one. The more dumb, smart people, when I say dumb, smart people, it's like people who don't know anything about science, but then they know how to grow and don't know anything about terpenes, but know anything about THC, start developing strains like, oh, girl crack cookies. Yeah, that's, oh my God. It's like, you're just weak strains. You're combining things that shouldn't be combined when we should have things that are compartmentalized and individualized so that people can find themselves more.
No, it makes a lot of sense. The right kind of testing, I think, done for THC would help a lot.
I'm, dude, that's a compliment. I actually look dark.
That boxer one says, he's the first brown person you've had on your show.
Dude, I am really so honored. Do you actually think I'm
this
dark?
This is not even the first. I had Mo on earlier this year.
yes, I'm dark.
Kevin Pham is Vietnamese.
Wait, you had Kevin Pham?
Yeah.
Kevin Pham.
The Bitcoin guy, yeah.
How old is he?
He's 20, maybe in his 30, maybe 30 something.
Kevin Pham.
Know. I'm terrible.
Is he from here?
I think.
Did I go to high school? Kevin Pham, do you have a brother named Stanley Pham?
I don't know.
Can you find out?
I don't know.
Kevin Pham, if you're out there, did we go to middle school together?
Well, you can see the, just look up the episode.
Okay, I'll look for it. That's the crazy, if you had Kevin Pham, who I think it is.
I don't know. I think that might be a common name in the Bay Area.
So over here, Vince Joyce.
Vince says, long-term cannabis for psychiatric conditions can have some psychological side effects.
It can only if you're not, since there's no development and understanding of terpene awareness. Yes, just like not using can cause
the term,
psychological damage.
The term side effects itself is.
Well, here, perfect example. If I'm bipolar,
if you do this thing, things happen.
Correct. Well,
side effects. Here's not always negative. Side effects don't necessarily be negative.
No, most times cannabis doesn't have side effects unless you use it incorrectly. Where now it's a side effect where it's like, look, the THC is helping relieve inflammation in the brain. It's going to help prolong your life, your longevity, keep you from getting Alzheimer's. But because you're using it wrong, every time you're using it, you're in a nervous, anxious state that you don't have good muscle growth. You don't breathe well. So now you're offsetting all the good things that it does. So take a terpene like pinene. If I'm pinene, it's the one that smells like dry wood or pine. Dry wood or pine, I don't feel fine. That's my little way. When I smell pinene, I know it's going to activate my flight or fight. And depending on how I am subconsciously and how acclimated I am and where I am and what environment, I could be in the mirror playing with my eyebrows for an hour. I could be in the like this, not listening to people, or I could end up cleaning the house and go on a great jog. Depends on the levels of other terpenes combined with the pinene. But certain people should just avoid it all the time, and that's what I do. I avoid pinene any chance I get. I smell stuff. I ask questions. Since most people aren't testing for terpenes, I try to educate myself as much as possible. Certain strains can develop, I believe, by being not – I call it the green bananas theory. Take a green banana. Take a regular banana. A regular banana helps you with your stool. If you ever have diarrhea – I would say, John, have a brat diet. Bananas, rice, apples, toast. All those things will help solidify your stool and help you have a bowel movement, right? But if I gave you a green banana, that could give you diarrhea because it'll upset your stomach. Mm. But if you don't know the difference between a green and a brown banana, a banana is a banana.
If you eat too many bananas, you get backed up.
Correct.
That happens to the
So that's why, to answer your question, the correct terpene use can actually help relieve psychiatric conditions and make you balanced just as much as it can create imbalance. And that's why it's important for people to actually be testing for terpenes, for more people to identify terpenes. And if you ever come to any of my events or classes or come visit me at the shop, I have all kinds of charts and all kinds of educational material to guide you.
Let's get to that part of the you're working a job. You got a regular job at the factory.
Correct.
Right, to pay the bills. And then you're working on side gigs using your network stuff, the bartend. And then you find your way into...
So I got into makeup and fragrance next.
Oh, next
that was the next step. And I think this was a definer in my career. Because when I got out of the military, you got to understand, especially now with all the Me Too and stuff, in the military, we're hella insensitive. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear about Me Too in the military. The men and women both have horrible mouths. And there's a, I guess there's a kind of respect when you both carry a gun and you're both under fire and you're doing like a job or your life is online. There's a lot of validation and you feel good about yourself as a person that like, we it was part of the game. Men and women said horrible things to each other. Very rarely anyone ever got offended. And if things did, we worked it out as a unit, but now we're not in the military no more. And you got that military mouth and sometimes you're insensitive to people. And so, and I think her Sue Conti has listened to this. She was a very important person in my life. She was a girlfriend, a bit older than me. And she worked at Neiman Marcus and she got me my job there. She said she saw greatness in me. She said, you're a great salesman. And she's like, you know a lot. She's like, we clean you up a little bit. You could be great. So she took me shopping. She showed me how to really dress. Like, I always like to wear slacks and shirt, but she really showed me how to dress up and wear fitted clothes. And she got me a job. And I started selling Tom Ford fragrance, which back then people were like, why am I going to pay? Yeah, I had the card. And I'm like, ooh, the perfume. And people were like, how much is it? I'm like, $500 a bottle. And it smells like shit. Right now, people are like, oh, Tom Ford. It was hard when I was selling, okay? And I worked in Neiman Marcus in Palo Alto, and that was one of the hardest places to work because people would lose their job like that. They are a tight-knit group. If you say something offensive, it gets around. If people don't like you, it gets around. And knowing who I was, there's no way I would have lasted there. And that's when I started really developing how to learn to be quiet, listen. And the weed helped, by the way. I started now smoking cannabis. I finally gave in to my use. And so that's something I didn't talk about is I started my cannabis use in 2005. And that's why I'm very about psychiatric effects because it was not pleasant. Weed was horrible for me. Coming from Red Lines and Ephedra, staying up late, I drank a lot to fit in the military. That's what we did. We were cops. You drink to fit in. My brain was wired. I had a chemical. I was already a different person chemically. The military made me a certain way. And depending on the life you live, you breathe and dispel certain chemicals. If you breathe a certain way, you provide certain chemicals. If you breathe a certain way and live a certain life, you become that life. And so when I started first smoking cannabis, there was no terpenes and THC testing. I got it from the cool guy in my neighborhood who's my best friend. And they would smoke me out. And it was an unhealthy environment. And all this was, I didn't know was crafting what
smoking
I'm doing
blunts,
now.
Smoking blunts, probably.
Yeah, smoking blunts. It was a horrible first experience. And let me tell you, the first experience is powerful because that's why we have a lot of people who are anti-cannabis. So many people in a vulnerable state tried it and felt suicidal, homicidal, terrified, all who are like, there's no way I want my kids or America to have this. And then they become someone powerful and they have a voice and they're like, this sucks. And everybody else listens. It was horrible. The first couple times I smoked weed, I thought they had put drugs in it. And I would accuse my friends like, you put coke in this or something. Like, dude, laughing. Right. I would be high for 9 hours. I would say horrible, embarrassing things. Psychologically, I felt suicidal. Like, not like I wanted to kill myself, but like, I remember being high and being like, what if I kill myself? What if I can't control it? Like, I would think crazy things when I was thinking like, no one should be thinking these things. So why did I keep smoking weed? Because every day when I woke up on my friend's couch, all hungover from the weed, peace in my heart. For like 2-3 days, like I would, the stuff would carry over and I would talk soft. I would be more focused
more
and
calm.
I started realizing like, there's gotta be something here. Then once in a while I would smoke one and it was the greatest in the world. I would laugh. I would watch a movie. I would write things in a book. And I finally came to this conclusion that regardless, the cannabis started to make me enjoy life more. And I love life, but I stopped liking life. So it's not like I need cannabis to love life. It's that cannabis gets me back to where I need to be so that I can continue to do what I always did. And so I started using more and more cannabis and I didn't care. And it affected my relationships. Like my girlfriend thought I was a drug addict and we would fight all the time. Like we would do these things where she would smoke with me and then we would go for a walk. We would throw the blunt in the street. And then 2 days later, I'd be looking for that blunt because I wanted to smoke again. Because I didn't realize, like, why was I depriving myself of this thing that I really need? We all need it in one way or another. Some of us need it more than others. Some of us will come to find it when we finally are in some sort of traumatic experience or event that changes our chemical output or how we breathe. It'll be there for you when you get older. At least when you're 55, if you've never used it, you should already start looking into using it because it'll give you a whole new perception of life. The brain needs it. The body needs it. But we need better people developing constructs and having more respect for their use. I think too many people love their weed use but don't respect it, or they prevent other people from finding that love and respect by making them feel they have to follow certain rules.
If you're using it for escapism, it's going to be bad.
Well, may I put a caveat to that?
If you use it for improvement, so like, how can I improve my life?
So here, I want to say, there's nothing wrong with escaping a bad situation as long as you come back ready to confront it. I think of cannabis as it can open a window to allow you to get out of where you're at sometimes. But if you're not careful, that window will turn into a bar. It'll bar up on you. And next thing you know, cannabis is your prison. And you're one of those people that shows up at the shop like, nothing works. I got a tolerance. I dab. Oh, really? Weed's kind of like, oh, whatever. I need to get a lot. And they don't realize, no, you probably are like the same person who's like, I can't gain size no more. I lift hella heavy and I try protein and I don't gain size. It's like you probably have bad posture. You don't breathe well. You don't eat well. I bet you if we went back and started lifting lighter, you'd probably start gaining size again. Same thing with a lot of people, cannabis people. It's like you're using all the wrong strains for yourself. You don't take the right measures. You probably don't grind it and break it up. You don't wait in between. You don't know when to eat. You haven't learned about terpenes. The body can only absorb so much THC, just like with protein. Remember when all these guys... You come from that era. You probably, just like me, overconsume protein in your life when they would tell you, you got to have 20, what was it? It was something ridiculous, like 40 grams every 3 hours, and you had to have like 120 grams of protein per...
I eat a shitload of protein.
Well, you know that the body can only absorb 20 grams every 4 hours, and everything else becomes a surplus. And what they're finding is men and women who overconsume protein eventually later in their life had osteoporosis. Irritable bowel syndrome, colon cancer, all kinds of problems. The same thing with probiotics. Probiotics were meant to be found in the substance, the yogurt. They were a symbiotic part that worked synergistically with something. Then somebody said, hey, I'll sell probiotics by themselves. And now what do we find out about probiotics by themselves? They're not good for you on their own. They were not meant to be separated. Well, now CBD's headed in that direction. And that's something else I don't know if we're going to even get a chance to talk to, because I'm tired of hearing about CBD. My friend's a cop, and he was telling me that he started hearing CBD too, because now every time he pulls someone over with weed, it's always CBD. Everybody's weed is magically CBD. So that's a big part of where I was headed. Was cannabis made me a better performer. It got me jobs because I would go in calm and quiet. It allowed me to sit still. It allowed me to endure hours on my feet. I mean, nothing beats going 4 or 5 hours at work bartending than taking a 20-minute break. You're already tired of everyone at the bar. Your feet hurt. Your back hurts. You're already like, want to go home. And then you smoke that quick mercerine limonene combo or whatever your terpene combo is. And all of a sudden, homeostasis kicks in and you feel good. You feel good. You know what? You go back and make some of the best margarita of their life. You freaking shake that fucking thing till it foamed. You cleaned everyone's. You went back and gave the last 2 hours of your shift. It was like a whole nother person. Or if you have kids, you know, like, here's an important one. I don't have kids, but I know a lot of parents have kids. Come home and you're all full of your important life that your kid wants to show you some color, or he did something. You're like, yeah, Tommy, cool. Well, yeah. Oh, blue. You're not connecting with him. You smoke a little weed. And now it's like, oh my God, this is a, oh, you want to market here, buddy? There's something it provides for us. And whether you understand or not, many of us don't allow ourselves to let go, to connect. We're unable to find homeostasis. If you don't know what homeostasis means, you can look up the scientific word, but it really means the ability to create your own self-inspiration, your own ability to create inner motivation, that joy that comes from your own inner activation. And cannabis is a bridge or a conduit to allowing us to find that more regularly.
I can see that. Get you in touch with your center point of origin.
Correct.
A little bit. So then when did you start getting involved with White Fire?
So it took me a couple of years. I had a website too. Me and a couple of really smart people opened a dispensary in 2010, but we were the first to go online and we did some really badass shit. No one had ever seen an online delivery. I ran a tight crew with my three guys and my ex-girlfriend and my best friend. And we had a 5-bedroom house and we had the first legal delivery, but it was like gray because no one had ever seen it before. We paid our taxes. Long story short, it got raided. It got shut down in 2012 and it was terrifying. And it was a really hard experience for me because I lost everything. This was the greatest thing ever. I finally was in the industry. I could pick and choose and voice my opinions. I was getting really into fitness now. I started training and doing MMA, not low level, not no pro, nothing, but training with guys like Ivan Batnich now and Nate Moore, and you know, getting my reprieve, this prestige of coming back now as a more calm, healthy individual. And I lost that. I fought the case and we won, but I went homeless for a year. We ran such a tight ship and we had such everything, our computer, the taxes, the way we did deliveries, that they couldn't really, they had nothing. It was just that we couldn't be in Santa Clara. And we were in a time when cannabis was not really allowed.
Somebody wasn't getting their cut.
No. And you know what's funny? All the guys who used to pick on me and beat me up were all the cops who showed up at my house who raided me that day. And it was just so funny. It was like a high school reunion at my house. So luckily, I wasn't married. I don't have kids. And I spent the next year secretly living in my car, working at Neiman Marcus, bartending and managing nightclubs downtown San Jose and saving my money. Spent a lot on dry cleaning and, you know, I would shower at the gym twice. I would train twice a day. I mean, I was probably my best shape of my life. And I rebuilt myself. And that's when I realized it was one day I was going to 24-Hour Fitness to go work out here on Parkmore Meridian because that's my favorite one. That's like a special place, that free weight section. There's no one other like it. And so I started realizing that now when I smoke cannabis, I had the best workouts of my life. I mean, I could sit still for an hour and breathe deep. And so that was my thing. I'd go and smoke and go inside. So one day, I was trying to find a place to smoke because I could hit my pipe. And everywhere I went, there was somebody parked. And I was getting pissed. I'm like, God damn it. First I park and the lady with her kids is there. And they're like doing stuff with the car. I'm like, oh, I felt ashamed to take a hit in the car. You know, and traumatize people. So I drove again. And then the lady. And then, so finally, I found a place by a tree. And I park. And then this fucking guy in an Eclipse pulls up in front of me. And now he's in the car parked there. And I'm like, pissed. Like, for fuck's sake, can I just hit my weed? So finally, I'm like, screw this guy. I'm going to smoke my weed. So I kind of lean over and I take my little hit and I hit it. And when I come back, the guy is pointing at me laughing and he pulls out his pipe because he was doing the same thing I was doing. He was trying to find his place.
He's like, this motherfucker over here.
And he's like, God damn it. So
God damn it.
I started coming up with this thing that I was like, this is bullshit. Why should I be ashamed? I got to go in there and they got all those fucking supplements. They even have shirts like I lift tequila or I lift vodka shots because lifting weights to solve your problems. I don't know. They have all these like alkaline promoted alcohol at 24-Hour Fitness. I felt ashamed because I smell like weed. And I was like, why? Why can't I just come to a gym where I can be respected? So that's when I started coming up with the idea that it's not that I wanted to make a weed gym. I don't want a weed gym. That's a mistake. I wanted a respected gym that acknowledged people's right to use cannabis and didn't judge them and even had its own area or its own like X-Files, like its own department that furthered what I call now cannabis performance facilitation. And basically what I think cannabis performance facilitation is, it's different than smoking weed and working out. It's using protocol, it's understanding science, it's using the scientific method and understanding your own chemical disposition. Look, taking stock in yourself athletically and genetically and trying to see where you wanna go and where you wanna be and where you are now, and then sticking to a real diet. Cannabis performance facilitation means you can't use certain strains and you can only use at certain times and you have responsibilities like eating when the activation makes you hungry and learning when you're too tired or when one makes you spazzed out and being able to take notes to help further this for now other people who want to learn. And that's what I'm now doing. So Whitefire opened that door for me. I finally found Whitefire in 2017. And the owner there was a bit skeptical about my workouts and about cannabis, but he owned a dispensary. And so I convinced him to train with me for 6 months. And I got trained by one of the best. His name is Peter Imperial. And I studied with this guy for 2 years. He's like a borderline autistic genius. I call him a Beethoven because he didn't like cutting his hair. And he didn't like to shower and stuff. And one of the greatest trainers to ever walk the earth, man. He does biomechanics. he replaces people's muscles. He was doing rolfing before rolfing was even a thing. He would rolf people. He's not even a rolfer. He put my scapula back in its place. I had an inverted rib cage. He rebuilt my stomach, my back, my knees. I mean, the guy's brilliant. And I learned as much as I could from him, and I applied it to the owner of Whitefire. And in 4 months, I rebuilt that guy's posture and his body. He was pretty impressed. As well as I started showing him how to use cannabis because he said he only had negative experiences. So he finally decided that he wanted to invest and open a gym. Now, I had tried doing something earlier with a project called, I believe, Power Plant Fitness. But they had a great idea, too. They wanted to open a gym in San Francisco, but it just didn't. I didn't fit what they were looking for. I wasn't really what they wanted.
Oh, you heard about that.
They had their own idea with Ricky Williams, and that's fine. Yeah. You know, I knew that now I had opened the door to this, that he had a great idea too, but that's not what I wanted. I didn't want a weed gym. I wanted a gym where I could develop cannabis performance facilitation. Mm-hmm. And have
it wasn't like the focus. You didn't walk in and there's pot leaves and all the gym clothes and on the weights.
Correct. But I also wanted to get away from athletes. No offense to my fellow athletes, but sometimes athletes are the worst example of how to get healthy, because athletes aren't very healthy. You think they are, but they're not. Athletes do whatever it takes to make it.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of people, a lot of regular people who are, you know, you're an accountant, you do sales, you know, in sales for a tech company. Like why are you doing the same workout that Arnold Schwarzenegger did to win his second Mr. Universe title?
I asked a lot of people, are you planning to be a fighter? Why are you training like one? It's not good for your body.
Now, I believe you need, you know, self-defense. You need to be able to protect yourself if attacked.
Absolutely.
That's functional. To me, that's functional.
And it's also important to having humans to connect.
Some level of mastery of violence is a functional skill you need to have.
Absolutely.
But like, yeah, you don't need to be like doing crazy weight.
I wanted to open a gym to me, what I thought was
So is that, so is this the NX? Is that
NX? So NX stands for inhale, exhale. And right now I've been very quiet about it because I finally went to the city to get my consumption permit. So what I realized is it doesn't matter who wants to do this now. It doesn't matter who wants to do this. If you want to do it, you're going to have to get a consumption permit, or else you're always going to just be a backdoor, underground, hole-in-the-wall facility. In order for this to get respected and for this to actually evolve, it's got to be accepted by the city. I got to be able to openly advertise and make people feel comfortable that we're not just doing some backdoor garbage. So what I have done now is I've stopped all of my online campaign, and now I'm working with a lobbyist, an attorney, and the city, and we're developing right now a proposal. So I'm looking for a building. I found three right now in San Jose. Basically, we're going to buy it. I have two investors, one of the Whitefire plus another one, and myself. And if you make it, they will come, right? If you build it, they will come. And so there, what we're going to have is I've created a virtual reality massage center. And what virtual reality massage is, we do CBD-infused massage. But we designed the massage tables to have a hole in the face plant that's large enough to wear an Oculus Rift.
It's like a hole in that. I've seen that. I've seen those videos.
Yeah. And so now you can get a massage wearing a sensory deprivation, noise canceling headphones and an Oculus Rift while you get a CBD infused massage. And you can pick your modality, you know, space, you know, forest, serene, sky. Our massage therapist, Courtney, she does Ashiatsu, deep tissue, and she's been working and learning about CBD THC infusion for a long time. It's not about hemp. It's about full spectrum products that are great for the body. We work with Clout and Papa Barkley Cream, two of the best products. And so right now, until we have our gym, she has her own massage studio in Willow Glen, and I'm constantly booking appointments for people there to come experience her massage. Yeah. And then we got
Vlada here says, never smoke indica listening to a guy buzzed on sativas. It's exhausting. don't forget to breathe, my man.
So again, it's not
you're
the
getting indicas. A lot of content in.
It's not the indicas or sativas time. That do that. So if you want to educate yourself as well, indicas and sativas do not give you uplift or down. They are a mix of terpenes that we have now generalized to fit a certain title. Like with movies, is it an action or is it a drama? That's what we've done with indica and sativa, but that does not work like that. Sativas can make you feel relaxed and tired. Indicas can make you paranoid and nervous. For me, and that's always been kind of the thing for me, is like I've always had to worry about how I speak, because too many people, someone who speaks fast, it's an identifier of weakness, or people pick it apart because it is annoying. I've learned that sometimes I do rub people the wrong way with the way we speak, and it's important. But guys like that are also dumb enough to, if you speak slow and quiet, they'll buy whatever you sell. So with that being said, indica and sativa do not exist, other than indicas are short bud plants that are more dense. Sativas are more hairy. And then there's also the ruderalis plant where CBD comes from. So back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So with so white.
You've got the white fire. You've got NX Fitness, inhale, exhale.
Correct. And so what I did was I realized like this wasn't about me. So another reason too is I started getting with other people who are more calm and quiet too to help validate me, because I need a team. Mm-hmm. And I can't only be the one. There has to be other people who have found the same peace or place of existence through cannabis, this cannabis performance facilitation. And so I started with the city, and I've heard rumors that Nike and Equinox are trying to do the same thing now too. When I started in 2012, it was a big no-no. Like, even people who exercise would get mad at me. Like, you can't talk about this, bro. No, you're not. Who are you to tell people to use cannabis and work out? And I understood that. So instead I shut up.
And there's a lot of, as a business owner, a gym owner, like, you know, that's a person's paying $100-$120 a month membership, but then they feel uncomfortable because they smell weed.
Let me answer this one. If I can answer this one.
Okay, Lada.
Tell them I'm not.
Lada says, interesting niche idea, but considering BJJ gyms are a business that need to break even, that's leaving out big chunk of potential clients. No, actually, kids class don't even see patents that smoke. Parents that smoke, be thrilled.
But see, this is exactly what I'm trying to get away from. Who said anything about BJJ? That's a niche. To make it a BJJ place, I'd be limiting myself.
Yeah.
This is a gym that offers everything from salsa dancing to stretching to breathing, TED Talks. It's a 80% yoga, regular gym with a 20% evening classes that are scheduled and controlled, which offer one jujitsu, one stretching, one breathing. I don't want kids at my class. It's not time for that. This is a 21 and up facility, because right now my job is to develop this into something. I'm not interested in making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm interested in reaching all of those out there who are doing this. And believe me, there's a lot of people who would love to come to a place where they are not judged, where they could speak with a professional who's identified
the
strains.
The best way to make money would be to get involved with a insurance company.
So
if you can show treatment, health, and whatever.
Well, one of the things that we looked at is, by not calling it a cannabis gym, I can get that. I'm a gym. If I'm the owner of the building and I want to have my own section, and I've already gotten a consumption permit from the city, I can do whatever I want. Whether I get shut down or not, or someone sues me, that's a whole nother story. And I think by using a lot of the methods that we've created and sticking to cannabis performance facilitation, learning terpenes, you can control a lot of the variables and give people an amazing experience and give them their first takeoff or activation, a healthy activation that breeds confidence to say, whoa, I enjoyed that. Wow, I breathed deeper. I felt stronger. I want to keep doing this. I think it's crazy that we're in a society that it's totally acceptable, or like, it makes more sense to inject your butt with a needle and do the horrible things to your organs than to smoke a joint before working out.
Or even
what kind of backwards skip society the workout, are we in where that makes more sense?
Skipping the workout and drinking.
Oh yeah, that's another one too. Yeah. Or how many times I see people after the workout they're puffing a cigarette.
Yeah,
in the car.
I can't come to the gym that early in the morning. I'm drinking.
And Vlad, I would love to invite before. You to one of my yoga classes. Or I would love
yeah,
to.
Yeah, so let's we gotta wrap up here. So what are ways people can reach you, and what local, you have a lot of local stuff going
on. So if you want, come out to, so right now I took a little break from putting everything online while we're working with the lobby, because the city doesn't want to see everything I'm doing now and everything I'm putting out there, and I'm totally fine. I'm honored to have that communication with them, because this is the only way it's gonna happen. If they want, they can come to Whitefire 111 Old Tully Road and come meet with me. If you're interested in checking out any of my classes, or visiting me at one of these events, I'll gladly treat you and give you a free pass to come in. Everything is provided for you. You can email me at jp@inx.fitness. That's jp@inx.fitness. And get a hold of me. I'm pretty local and pretty down to earth. And if you get me in the right environment, I do talk slow and I take deep breaths.
Just got to get him high enough. He'll slow down.
And you know what? One day Whitefire will deliver in Canada. Yes, and Whitefire, I did deliver to some people from Canada who were here in San Jose for one of the hockey games.
Come watch a hockey game and stop by Whitefire. All right. So thanks for coming in and being a guest.
Oh my God, what an
studio.
Honor this was, dude.
You got a lot of good information. And yeah, ran a little bit long, but that's good.
I never thought I'd be hearing John play the ukulele. It's like, what's your dream? I'm gonna do MMA with John Fitch one day. It's like, well, you'll be on this podcast, you guys will smoke some weed, and he'll play the ukulele for you. And I'd be like, I'll take it. Canon in D. Come on, it's my favorite part. That was bad, John. That's awesome. Bad as in badass. I can kind of play that on the piano. That's the hardest part.
Oh.
Damn it, John. Hey, that's fucking hard to play.
Trying to hold it together. It's cold in the garage. Fingers are cold. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. John Fitch Knows Nothing. Our guest, special guest, JP, sharing his history.
I'm honored, man.
Going through the military, some 9/11 conspiracies. And his role as an entrepreneur and just getting after it and having the courage to go and do that.
Can I give a quick product shout out?
Yeah.
Check out Kikoko Tea, one of the baddest tea companies and the only tea company that they make a sympathy, a tranquility, a sensuality, and a positivity. They have their own CBD THC breakdown, Papa Barkley Cream, Clout Cream, and then, of course, our number one and only supporter, Sensi Chu, who's taking so good care of us. And again, come see me at the dispensary. I'll take good care of you guys. Just mention the podcast.
Yeah, and then you guys can get some cheap soap, 15% off, ballwash.com. Use code FISH. Get your nuts freshened up there, guys. All right. Have a good one. Take it easy, guys. Check you later.
Check you later. So